A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What's up, guys? Ryan Sprague here, and I'm just dropping in to remind you about our Patreon campaign. Somewhere in the Skies is always free to consume, but it's not free to create. So if you want to help the show on a monthly basis, we have tons of rewards for you in return, including shoutouts on the show and website, bonus content and episodes, and free merch. Want to be my guest or pick a topic for the show? You can do that too. So if you'd like to learn more and to help support the show, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you, and keep looking up.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
Welcome to a very special live stream we're doing this Sunday evening. So first of all, I have to thank all of you for coming on here with me tonight and joining in on the fun on your Sunday evening, especially our two, I'm going to call them co-hosts tonight. They're not guests. They're going to be co-hosts. And we're going to be talking all about the UFO stories of 2021, our favorites, what we thought were some of the best stories about UFOs to hit us this past year. And then what comes next in 2022? What do we hope comes next in terms of UFOs? But before we bring in our co-hosts, one of them was unfortunately not able to join us tonight, Chrissy Newton. She did have an emergency, but she sends her best to everyone. We send our best thoughts and prayers and love to her as well. But we got someone who came in from the dugout and is going to be replacing Chrissy tonight. And I'm really excited about that. Other than that, I do want to introduce the little guy here in the corner. This is my communion bust that I just had made. This thing is incredible and a little terrifying, I'm not going to lie. I had this made by Steve Neal. He is an artist in Los Angeles, and this thing is just incredible. It is as lifelike as it comes. It's got an amazing little pedestal here. So he's going to be joining us, Mr. Communion, on the show every week now. So yes, thank you to Steve Neal. You can check out his studio where he makes all different types of movie memorabilia and alien busts and stuff like that. His link is in the show notes below. So yeah, that's all I got, guys. So without further ado, let's bring in our two co-hosts for tonight. First, we have journalist at TexasUFOSightings.com, host of the Weird UFO Show on YouTube, and co-host of the Unidentified Celebrity Review. So first and foremost, UFO Jane, welcome to Somewhere in the Skies.
Hey, that communion alien is awesome and so creepy. I don't know if I could have it in this space. I think I'd have to put it in a different part of the house.
It's gonna amazing. Go away after the broadcast for sure, because I cannot be coming in the room in the dark and that thing
right?
staring at me. But
yeah while researching UFOs, they're watching
it's too much. It's too much.
That's Jane. Awesome though. That's amazing.
Well, thank you for joining me tonight. This is gonna be pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited.
Let's bring in our second co-host. Like I mentioned, unfortunately, Chrissy won't be here, but taking her place is none other than the Mouth from the South. Let me do his other little intro I did here as well. We've got author, researcher, creator of the space tech defense and UFO news media site, The Debrief, and host of many podcasts, including the titular Micah Hanks program. Joining us tonight is Micah Hanks. What's up, my man?
Good to be here as always. Extraordinary to be here with both of you. And of course, to finally grace the presence of the lovely Lady Jane. So I'm extremely excited to be here for this conversation tonight. And by the way, knowing it would be a historic conversation, I put on my my little like Indian elephants.
I love it.
This thing in. So now I feel like I'm ready to travel, you know, the seven seas, maybe go all the way around the world. And perhaps, in fact, tonight we shall.
Oh, we will. Sweet. We will. And to celebrate, I've got a Guinness here. So cheers to both of you. Cheers to everyone watching. What do you got, Jane?
This is Crawford Bock. It's beer. I'm not a beer expert. It's beer. It's good beer. It's from a brewery that's in Houston, here in Texas. So, but it's super yummy.
Excellent.
So. Well, should have known you'd have a Texas beer. Yeah. What do you got there, Micah?
Well, I don't have Guinness tonight. Strangely, you know, actually, this is a beer. When I was a young man, I used to love the old Heine. And, you know, for whatever reason, I revisited this famous beverage right here. And indeed, she doesn't let me down. But I'll tell you, as you know, my longtime and I think really ultimate favorite is the Guinness, what you have in the glass there. And I see apparently your friend with a rather large eyes behind you.
Who's drinking it?
He's going to be partaking tonight as well. I know. I'm guys, this is going to be so much fun. This is going to be super laid back. Everyone in the chat, please feel free to join in. Tell us what your favorite stories of 2021 were. But I came to you, Jane and Chrissy, originally with what stories you guys wanted to talk about in 2021 that happened with UFOs. And of course, Mike is going to hit us with his favorites later on in the program. But the first one I really want to talk about that I believe you brought to us, Jane, was Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. This book
Chrissy
that came
brought
out.
This up, but
oh, she did. Okay,
It's of course. I mean, who doesn't want to talk about Skinwalkers?
Well, I'm fairly well equipped to be able to talk about anything that Chrissy was going to talk about. You know, when you sent the last minute invite, she messaged me right afterward and explained her situation. Said thank you for covering for me. And I'll just say, whether it's the Debris family or whether it's our extended family, of which both of you are a part, we all look out for each other. So I got her back. Okay.
Absolutely, man. And that's why I love you guys. It's amazing. Let's say hi to some of the people in the chat here. We got Aaron Desario, Rodrigo, Greg, Misfire Jack. We got Matthew Riot, who's always here. Girl with the Sasquatch tattoo. Greg, Grandmaster UV, UAP. I can't even say that. Atiroa? I don't know. But guys, thank you. Thank you for joining us tonight. If I missed you, send me another chat here. Good evening to everyone. Let's start, guys, with Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. I'm going to do a little synopsis here of the book. Skinwalkers at the Pentagon was written by George Knapp. Tell me if I'm wrong. George Knapp, Colm Kelleher, and oh my gosh, what was the main guy?
James Lukacsky.
Thank you. Thank you, Micah. And what was his position? Do you remember?
Yes. So James Lukacsky essentially was the program manager for this project. Of course, OSAP, that was run out of the Defense Intelligence Agency, which is a combat support agency of the DOD. And as Lukacsky and his co-authors, the legendary reporter George Knapp, and also Colm Kelleher, who had been involved with the National Institute for Discovery Science going back to the early days of Bigelow's UFO investigations. These three guys basically explain, you know, what the scope of the OSAP program was and where the confusion arised from the idea of ATIP and how it related to OSAP, which we can get into a little later.
Absolutely. Yep. And we missed Mr. Sio Apocalypse here, so we're going to have to say hi to him as well. Micah, thank you. Thanks for catching up us up on that. What I'm going to do, Jane, before I get your thoughts on this book and what you made of that entire confusion, I guess, between ATIP, OSAP, and what was in the book. I do have a portion of the interview that George Knapp actually did with his co-authors. So if you guys don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and play that now, and we'll get your thoughts on the other side.
Can you address whether OSAP was first and foremost an investigation of UFO phenomena? Why isn't it made obvious in any of the documentation that's been made public so far?
It was completely UFO related. The reason you haven't seen the documentation is we used a statement of objectives format for the request for proposal. That is insufficient for anyone examining the contents of the contract. They must have the proposal. Now, within the proposal, And in this case, it was from Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies. It's clearly mentioned among the topics proposed, a worldwide database of advanced aerospace vehicles. There can be no ambiguity here. This was being proposed as a UFO project. Now, if you want to look at the tail end of the project, you'll find over 100 documents required to be reported to the Defense Intelligence Agency that were UFO related, in part, of course. I mean, they were large, very large documents. And you also have, technical studies, and you have that database, probably the largest UFO database that exists in the world and is currently being used by the U.S. military. So, yes, it was completely a UFO project.
One of the other things that's been confusing for the public over the last almost 4 years, the New York Times and other major media outlets reported that $22 million went to ATIP, not to OSAP. Can you clarify the difference between OSAP and ATIP?
Yes. The name ATIP was a nickname for OSAP for certain security reasons that we've put into the book. But the difference between OSAP with the nickname ATIP at DIA and ATIP at the Pentagon is quite distinct. OSAP had $22 million of funding. It covered military and civilian UFOs, yielding a massive database. Now, ATIP in the Pentagon, as described in the articles, was basically zero funded, looked at specific military UFO encounters and very important ones because they had film and it had no contract. So getting back to how did this mix up occur? I think it's not deliberate. It's not due to authors, to television personalities, et cetera. It's the fact we were running not an official SAP, but a closed program. I can tell you for a fact that within my own office, they did not know, except leadership, that this contract was being run.
Yeah, so, and that is the longest video I have tonight, guys. So stick with us, I promise. That'll be the longest one. But I wanted to really show kind of, you know, this issue that kind of arose. You know, we had the New York Times in 2017 saying, you know, ATIP, this huge Pentagon program, had $22 million. And now we come to find out through this book, they didn't have a dime of it. So what do you guys think? What do you make of all of this stuff that they brought forward in the book and just the book in general? Did this help the UFO topic? Did it hinder it? Yeah. What are your thoughts? Jane, let's start with you if you don't mind.
Well, I did not, excuse me. I did not read the book. So I was reacting to the reactions of the book. And so in my opinion, I don't know that it helped. I don't know if it hurt the UFO community, but I don't know if it helped. I feel like the majority of the conversation was around the book cover and why did it look so bad and dino beavers. And it's kind of funny listening to this interview now, because what are we talking about today? Acronyms again, and you know, future offices, right? And what they can and can't do, right? So it's just that part feels tired to me. I don't think I was curious to clarify any of that, where like specifically where the black budget money went. So I guess you could say I'm a little jaded about these recent disclosures, but Skinwalker Ranch is hugely fascinating to me, you know, aside from everything, but that's my cursory glance on that.
I will admit I was one of those people who went really hard on the cover, and I regret it now because when I actually got the book like in my hands, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. It's got like a retro, very simple feel to it, a little melodramatic, which is Skinwalker Ranch in a nutshell, in my opinion. So, Micah, yeah, what did you make of everything they brought forward in the book? And kind of this issue that we have with the two programs.
I should first point out I was the cover artist. You both realize that, right?
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm kidding. Oh, don't man. Jane, goodness.
Ouch.
You'll get to know my sense of humor, Jane.
I didn't make any critiques of the cover, to be clear, since we have the artist with us right now.
Yes. I didn't do the art, by the way, at all. But I was following people's critiques of the art. Now, again, I think that there was some very important information in the book, and it definitely clarified a lot of matters. I should also mention my colleague and co-founder at the Debrief, Tim McMillan, also clarified a lot of this for us, going all the way back to last Valentine's Day in an article he did for Popular Mechanics, where he helped us kind of break down some of the confusion and some of the ins and outs of, you know, which program was which one got funding, what were the names, and why were there different ones. But briefly, to kind of recap what we heard, James Lukatsky, who had been the program manager there, and of course, co-author of this book describing, what we had was the Advanced Aerospace Weapons Systems Application Program. It was explicitly, according to Lukatsky, a UFO program. Of course, UAP being the more popular term that the military prefers to use these days, and apparently everybody else. And this program, it only ran for a couple of years. But at some point, you'll note in that audio soundbite you played there, Ryan, listeners at home, he mentioned at one point that this was not an official SAP, is what he said. Now, SAP is essentially SAP, or Special Access Program. That's what he's referring to. And at one point, Lukatsky et al., and this, of course, you know, in reference to all those who were actually managing this program, one of the program managers actually with Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies had been Colm Kelleher, who also recently did an interview on the Paracast where he spoke at length about some of what they found. But what they were trying to do was they were trying to get special access program status for that program. And so in order to do this, they appealed to Harry Reid. And this is what's described in the book. Harry Reid essentially wrote a letter. They didn't want to use the ALSAP name at that time, because my understanding, again, is that that was classified at that time. So they gave it an unclassified nickname, which was ATIP. We, of course, understand that to mean now Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. But that nickname was later borrowed by an informal Pentagon initiative that was led by Lou Elizondo, who we all know and love. And, of course, the rest is history. But it was a little confusing in 2017 when the New York Times first reported on all this, and they said there was $22 million appropriated for the ATIP program. As Lukatsky says, that's actually not accurate. The $22 million went to OSAP. It ran for just 2 years. Didn't get the SAP status, and then, you know, it basically ended there. But again, the Pentagon's ATIP program actually did continue thereafter. And again, iterations under different names have continued since that time, known popularly as the UAP Task Force under the Department of the Navy. And of course, most recently, there was a proposed amendment to the Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2022 that proposed a entirely different organization. But the one we got has the catchiest name of all time, the Airborne Object Identification Management and Synchronization Office, otherwise known as the OIMSG.
OIMSG. Just what we've always imagined.
I know.
So easy and slick and cool sounding. Come on. we'll get there. We will definitely get there. But
at that point, it's a buildup, you know.
Exactly. The acronyms just get longer and longer. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of, I guess, wrapping up the Skinwalker sort of thing. I mean, we have, you know, the show going on right now with the new owner of the ranch. We have all these stories of what happened in the past. We have these really crazy stories in this book about dino beavers and shadow people and things coming in and out of portals and, you know, unidentified celebrity review with our good friends that Jane also co-hosts the show, Luis and Michael, and rather they had James Carrion on, the former director of MUFON, who worked with Bob Bigelow for a little bit in partnership. And, I would say pushed back that anything truly anomalous ever happened at the ranch. So you have James saying this, you have this stuff in the book saying that a ton of stuff happened. You have stuff going on right now at the ranch with the new owner, Brandon Fugel. So I don't know. I don't know what to make of where this whole Skinwalker Ranch story is going, who's telling the truth, who's telling their own truth, which is subjective at many points, and where that's all going. But yeah, I thought this one was worth bringing up for sure. So yeah, any last words on Skinwalker before we move on to NASA?
I mean, I'm speechless. No, I mean, Skinwalker is just, it's like everything happens there, but then nothing happens there. It's just such a conundrum. And yeah, I don't really have, I don't think I can think of anything else.
Yeah, I'll also note again, in the book, there's some very interesting references to people who went out there. I mean, you know, former Navy servicemen and women, you know, people who had worked in other branches of government who had gone out there to the site and who had worked, describing that they came home and had this paranormal phenomena happening around their house. It's mm-hmm. It's difficult to know what to make of that. It really is. And again, you know, there's this side of me. I try to operate on different partitions on a single hard drive. I've used that analogy more times than I'm proud to admit, actually. But, you know, but the thing is that, again, there's that side of my mind that says, you know, we all could be children of the Matrix, and who knows what this is really all about. And then there's the side of me that says, and in defense of materialism, you know, let's look at the nuts and bolts. So, again, to summarize, Lukatsky said the program looked at UAP, but that it looked at all these tangent phenomena. And it seems like there was a whole lot of weird stuff that they were analyzing and, you know, kind of tangent to UFOs. And that just seems to really, again, raise all the more questions about really what the nature of the phenomenon we're dealing with actually is.
Exactly. Oh, God, it's just so that area. I don't know what it is. There's just something about it, whether it's in the air, under the ground, something truly anomalous is happening here. So, hey, you know, I will follow that show into the ground, as I'm sure they will try to get as many seasons as they can. And hey, look, if a TV network is going to pay these guys to go do scientific investigations, I'm all for it. So, yeah, I look forward to whatever comes next in the next season of Skinwalker Ranch. But let's move to our new good friend, the now 14th administrator of NASA, Mr. Bill Nelson. He's made some interesting remarks about UFOs recently. So I'm going to go ahead and play one of those really quick. Again, these videos are going to get quicker, guys, I promise. And give us some context about his kind of developments here in 2021.
What you've seen is what those Navy pilots saw in 2004, and there have been some 300 sightings since then. And I've talked to those pilots, and they know they saw something, and their radars locked onto it. And then all of a sudden it was here on the surface, and then it's there. And they don't know what it is, and we don't know what it is. We hope it's not an adversary here on Earth that has that kind of technology. But it's something. And so this is a mission that we're constantly looking. Who is out there? Who are we? How did we get here? How did we become as we are? How did we develop? How did we civilize? And are those same conditions out there in a universe that has billions of other suns in billions of other galaxies? It's so large, I can't conceive it.
It was suggested to me by many different people. They did want your comment on what you think the fighter pilot saw. I think most people saw that 60 Minutes piece, and there were a lot of newspaper pieces about whether or not it was Russia or China, or perhaps more likely some extraterrestrial intelligent beings. What is your theory? What you've heard a lot of options. Which one do you think is the most credible, if you can choose?
My personal opinion is that the universe is so big, and now there are even theories that there might be other universes. And if that's the case, who am I to say that planet Earth is the only location of a life form that is civilized and organized like ours?
So yeah, a lot going on there. Interesting interview. But yeah, he's been very vocal lately on the topic. And of course, people are going to broach it when they interview him, because what was it, Micah? The day after the report came out, NASA put something up on their website. I recall you covering this in an episode of the Micah Hanks program. Would you mind commenting on what role you think NASA is going to play, what role they played in 2021, and what they might play moving forward with the topic of UFOs?
Well, certainly. Yeah. You know, first of all, I'm a fan of Bill Nelson. I absolutely love his enthusiasm, you know, and if you read into his background, I mean, I would just tell folks, please, to, you know, go over to his Wikipedia page, you know, just read up on what Bill Nelson has done and how involved he's been with the space program for many years. You know, I couldn't imagine a better person to be appointed to the position of, you know, administrator as he has been. Now, that said, it's obvious that he's also, I think that the indications we have seen, at least since his appointment under the Biden administration, indicate that he is very willing to speak out and be pretty elaborate in what he says about topics that traditionally have been somewhat marginalized. And yes, we're talking about UFOs or UAP. Under Bill Nelson, we have not only seen that when they were leading up to the delivery of the ODNI report, he was saying, you know, I've asked NASA to look into some of this. But on the day of the delivery of the ODNI report, again, this being the actual report produced by the UAP task force under the Navy, but then that, of course, delivered by the Director of National Intelligence to Congress, and then a unclassified public version appeared at the website of the ODNI. Now, that's the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. That same afternoon, NASA put up a fact page on UAP, and although it said in that fact page, while NASA doesn't actively investigate UAP, you know, we collect a whole lot of information on a whole range of different things. And with all that data, much of it, by the way, I'll mention is available online. If you go to, I think it's NASA or earthdata.nasa.gov, I believe. But if, in either case, the fail-safe method is just Google Earth Data NASA. And you can find some of the kind of information I'm talking about, you know, data that NASA collects via satellite systems and other kinds of informational systems around the globe, and which it makes completely publicly available. And so there are a lot of civilian researchers and also some NASA employees I've spoken to, Ravi Kaparapu at, Glenn Research Center, I think is where he is, and others that I've spoken with who are interested in the idea that maybe some data NASA already has could yield information we don't know or didn't think to look for, you know, in terms of UAP and how that might actually be, you know, obtained. But Bill Nelson has more explicitly said in recent days that, yeah, you know, he wants to task NASA with looking into this program or issue, and furthermore to try and support the UAP task force or any other kinds of iterations it may take in government as you know, he can. Now, Larry Sabato, by the way, who was with the University of Virginia, and by the way, again, that being Bill Nelson's alma mater, so, I mean, you know, the portion of the video that you showed us there, that was kind of like a homecoming for Nelson, because that's actually his college, as I understand it. But Larry Sabato obviously had been prepared to ask that question, and I think Bill brought up the UAP topic and Navy pilot encounters before Sabato asked the question. So again, to have a NASA administrator who is as Nelson appears to be, that's great. I'm thrilled. And the last thing I'll say, by the way, even though he's got a hat on his head right now, is there's a striking resemblance between Bill Nelson and the bust on the hand there behind you.
I had to put the Mets hat on just for a little bit.
Yeah.
Suddenly so friendly with the hat. How does
name him Nelson. Call him Nelson, Ryan.
Nelson. Oh, much all right. Let's go with Nelson. I like Nelson.
I like Nelson. Yeah. I think you can keep him around. Nelson.
I got to get some Poindexter glasses for him if we're going to call him Nelson. Yeah.
Dude,
I'll work
you can
on
stay,
that.
But we got to put some glasses on those eyeballs.
Exactly.
Jade, all right, hit us.
You know,
you've looked a lot into NASA in the past on your channel and stuff. What do you think? What do you think of what they've done this year in terms of the UAP topic? And do you hope they become a bigger part of this overall conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been waiting for a statement like Bill Nelson's statement for NASA to just finally acknowledge that UFOs are real. When I first started discovering this phenomenon and thinking about it practically, I was like, well, if UFOs are real, then the astronauts know. And so my very early research was the astronaut sightings and learning about Edgar Mitchell and all his interesting belief systems, belief systems, the late Edgar Mitchell. And and I would cover, you know, NASA press conferences or things that they would say. And I was just waiting, you know, for this year. So, cause I made a note here, I was looking back at it, and in February, 2017. So interesting. This would have been before, if my math is right, if my dating is right, this would have been before the big New York Times disclosure. NASA said, or a spokesman from NASA said, the time for, you know, finding ET life is now. Like the time for the discovery of extraterrestrial life is now. And there were a lot of foreboding or forewarning, you know, statements about how, you know, if life is out there, it is ubiquitous and we'll find it. And so to me, that said, well, they know it's out there. And so they know that eventually they're going to find it and disclose it to us. And so I do feel that NASA is a big part of the UAP equation. I thought it was suspect that they weren't included in the June UAP report. Right. And, but are all the members of NASA fully in the know? I think that's definitely a question. I do want to remind people that there's a New York Times article where you guys can go and source this. I can share it later. But there was essentially a secret astronaut program that ran from the 60s to the 80s. So like moon landing to the 80s, it had over 30 astronauts. You know, so did they have UAP records? You know, would a NASA have absorbed those? You know, so I think those questions will start to get some more answers now that NASA's in the conversation. For sure.
Awesome. I'm going to have to look into that. I wasn't aware of that astronaut program. Wow. Yeah. Really interesting. Yeah. Everyone in the chat is they're all saying some good stuff. I want to just mention this. When Aaron said there was a UFO show on Broadway, I heard it was awful.
Wait,
that would have surprised me.
It has to be a joke.
So I'm not sure which one he's talking about, but as for those who don't know, I'm a playwright in New York City when I'm not UFOing. And that's my goal, is to get the first, you know, major UFO show on Broadway.
I maybe love Broadway. So I say that with complete love, because I would know about that musical if there was a UFO musical.
For sure. One's here. I love One. He's one of our loyal listeners. Yep. Hello from your favorite bald scientist. Great chat. Thanks, man. Thanks for being here. He was just on Peter Robbins' show recently.
Yeah. Well, he's one of our mutual favorite people because, you know, One, I think very, very highly of. I actually gave him a quote for his recent book
that just came out. Yeah.
Yep. Yes, indeed. So, and I think I own some format of copies of every book he's ever written. So, again, our bald scientist brethren is very, very well admired here in this quadrant of space and time.
Absolutely. One, put your book in the link, it in the YouTube right there, my man. We would love to get the word out about your brand new book. Let's see, just picturing a chorus line of ETs. Deborah, I'm going to make it happen. I'm working on it. I love this. I love how big NASA is getting. They're embracing this finally. I think it's about time. I mean, you could find NASA merch now at like every clothing store you can think of. So they're almost going through like a rebranding. So why not get in on this whole thing? We want them there, and they should be one of the first to be talking about all this, in my opinion.
Real quick,
Go ahead, Jen. Yeah,
please. And I also want to, I think it was 2016, NASA came out with all these posters that were, they were Mars colonization posters, farming on Mars, and like all the different jobs you could think, right? So you're talking about branding and propaganda, I guess, that was building, you know, up from NASA, you know, prior to all of, you know, these disclosures. Yeah, it's time.
It's propaganda, time. But man, they were beautiful posters, weren't they?
Yeah, they're cool. Yeah, they're really cool posters. They're
fantastic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe next time we do one of these together, we three, I'll switch out all the posters on the wall behind me.
With those, you know? Yeah, I should get some. Yeah, I should. Yeah.
Well, I think, Jane, you know, they make them available in high res format that you can download and print if you want. And so, you know, for those who, and again, they're NASA products. So my understanding is that they are a work in the public domain thereby. And so you can for personal use. There's no restriction on just printing off those high res, take them to Kinko's, put them on a jump drive, you know, mm-hmm. or email them. Now you can email them and have those printed off and then frame them, put them on the wall. That's you got great, a great new NASA look for the studio, ladies and gents.
Voila. I know. We all aspire. We all aspire to have that amazing background at the Micah Hanks mm-hmm. program for sure. let's move on to our third story for tonight, guys. This is probably one of my favorites, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. This was the UAP and nuclear weapons press conference that took place this year, hosted by Robert Salas, who a lot of people in the UFO field know. He was part of a Minuteman group that had a UFO sighting over a nuclear facility that adversely affected ordnance that was on the base at the time. And incredible story. And he has made it his mission to compile a lot of these UFO and nuke incidents and have people come forward and tell their stories and testimony at National Press Club events. And he put on one quite a few years ago, and now this past October 19th at the National Press Club. And I'm going to play a short video, I promise, short video here from a guy named Captain David Schindel. A little backstory here. He was a Air Force launch control officer and deputy commander at Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. He was involved in an incident in 1966 where, kind of like Salas, a UFO was seen over Minot Air Force Base and took down the ICBM missiles, 10 of them. And what he says in this press conference, which we're not going to hear his testimony, but we're going to hear a little something he said after his testimony, because it's what really tugged at my heartstrings. He remembers distinctly all of the officers at the base as this was happening. A lot of them were like cowering in the corner. They were terrified. They didn't know what was going to happen. Was this the end of the world? Were these aliens? Were these the Russians? What was going on? And he had to keep the mindset of a captain at the time, a launch control officer, to just figure out, assess the situation, and do what you have to do to make sure no one gets hurt or the world blows up. And pretty dramatic story. It really affected him. Like Salas, he was told never to speak about this, and it really ate away at him for decades and decades. And you can tell as he's telling this story, he seems very nervous. But it was what he did at the end of his testimony that really caught my eye and made it very human. So I'm going to play that really quick for you guys and then get your thoughts on what you thought about this conference. So let me just pull this up here. Let's go.
It is time for the truth to be brought out in open congressional hearings. This was in 1960. Behind the scenes, high-ranking Air Force officers are soberly concerned about the UFOs. But through official secrecy and ridicule, many citizens are led to believe the unknown flying objects are nonsense. To hide the facts, the Air Force has silenced its personnel. That was in 1960, but 6 years after that statement, I was one of those that Hillenkoetter was referring to as being silenced. His prophecy. That has now changed. I stand here before you today. I respectfully suggest that OD and I take another serious look at its report, because I am willing to testify on all of this before a congressional hearing. Robert Salas is very special to me. I wouldn't have come out and started talking if it wasn't for him. I had been searching the internet in the later 1990s, trying to find information on my incident and seeing if there was any documents out there for anybody was talking. I didn't find anything and I gave up. In 2001, I found an article on the internet describing Robert Salas's incident. And when I saw that, I said, oh my God, it's been verified. The incident that he had was almost identical to the one I had. And I experienced just a joyful freedom. And I finally was able to tell my wife my secret. And so Thanks, Robert, for helping me out.
So, yeah, those last moments as a playwright, as a dramatist, really hit me. I mean, you could tell, like, how much this affected this guy for so many years. Like, could you imagine? It's like I think of when all these guys at Skunk Works and stuff, when they first worked at Area 51, they couldn't tell their family what they were doing, where they were going, how long they'd be gone, blah, blah, blah. You could tell. This event really affected this guy, as I'm sure it has a lot of people. And a lot of people didn't know that this conference even happened. Even in the chat here, people are like, what is this? What is this? Awaiting Alien says it's on the Robert Salas YouTube channel. So you can watch the entire press conference that took place in October online for free. And then I'm not kidding. I think it was a week after this is when we got the Gillibrand Amendment first announced. I'm not saying they were connected, but I think it was really good timing. So, yeah, what did you guys think about this conference and just the entire UFOs and nukes topic in general? Micah, let's start with you.
Well, on that note, yeah, again, it had been announced that that event was going to happen. I must, again, give credit to my colleague, Chrissy Newton, or Agent Newton, as I call her, who does more than just handle the media and the marketing side of what we do at The Debrief. Chrissy, in her own right, is as good a UFO researcher as any, and she's as well connected in this community. And, you know, she had actually, I think, been the first that brought to my attention that there was going to be another press conference. And I say another because, again, if you recall, throughout the early 2000s, there were several, some of which, of course, we had Robert Salas in attendance there at the National Press Club, where they were, you know, talking about these experiences that former Air Force servicemen had had primarily throughout the 1960s and this involving a couple of incidents. And I'll just mention again, you know, what Salas experienced there at Malmstrom Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. There was a similar incidents, in fact, that occurred along many of the northern tier bases. One had been Mino Air Force Base. And others, a great resource for information on some of those. One of the first really that reported, you know, widely on that on at the time, what were newly obtained documents via the Freedom of Information Act request was the book called Clear Intent. It was republished under a different title, The UFO Cover-Up. But that was by Barry Greenwood and Lawrence Fawcett. And that book, again, you know, it sources from documents from, for instance, the National Military Command Center that describe all the events that Salas and some of his fellow servicemen, former servicemen, are describing right there. But when that event was brought to my attention, I reached out to Robert Salas immediately. And I asked him, I emailed him and I said, Robert, you know, is there any way that we could talk about this in advance of the event? I'd like to have you on my show, the Micah Hanks program, but I'd like to also write about the event there at the Debrief. And he said, you know, I'm not going to do a lot of interviews before this because the whole idea is to promote this, you know, and build up to that event. But he said, but right. I follow what you do and I read what you write for the Debrief, which was incredibly humbling for me because I have tremendous respect not only for Robert Salas and for his courageous and frankly, I think, just unparalleled efforts to try and bring awareness to this issue. But I mean, to all of our service women and men who have put their lives on the line and occasionally experience things that they don't understand, as has become increasingly apparent in recent years. So, you know, very humbling, not only that Robert would say, I read your stuff, but yeah, I'm going to do an interview with you. Can we just stick to certain facts? But I would like to do this. And so not only did I speak with him, but then the Debrief covered the event. And I was shocked, Ryan, to see only maybe two or three other outlets in the mainstream even broach it. And to this day, people are still saying, hey, well, you know, what was that? When did that happen? When did this guy get up there and, you know, tell these stories? What's this all about? Folks, this has been an issue for years. And in the Gillibrand Amendment, you're right, Ryan, there was a provision that explicitly said that UAP incidents occurring around nuclear facilities need to be observed and need to be understood. If there is ever an instance within UFO or UAP studies that indicates a challenge or potentially a threat to national security, I couldn't imagine a better one than aerial incursions around nuclear bases, where they're capable of disabling our ICBMs, is what Robert Salas described right there. So again, I have tremendous respect for the man and his courageous efforts to bring attention to this issue. It's just a shame that there aren't more outlets that are willing to broach that topic. Thank you. And good on you, Chrissy Newman, or Chrissy Newton, for bringing attention to it, to me, to, you know, for putting it on the list tonight. And again, to both of you for talking about it here on this program.
Absolutely. And Mark, thank you for the super sticker. Really appreciate it, brother. Jane, what do you think about the entire UFOs and nukes and the do you think this press conference made any waves in Washington? I mean, that's why they did it there. And, you know, I know our good...
I mean, maybe it affected people who are there literally in Washington who would be drafting an amendment, right? So I'm sure it had some effects, right? But I don't know that the general public or, you know, outside Washington really caught on to that story. As far as UFOs and nukes in general, that's kind of an interesting thing because here in tech, if you talk about civilian reports or day-to-day reporting, that's not something I've encountered really at all. And I think if there are sightings by nuclear facilities, you know, here in Texas, witnesses aren't connecting the dots that they're seeing, that's a factor, if that makes sense. So I probably have more work to do, but my guess is that those types of sightings are classified. So despite all the years of reporting I've done, you know, here in Texas and all the videos and photos, there is still a lack of that, you know, that compelling evidence that would convince McWest, right? And so I do think a lot of that is still classified, right? So that's one part of it, my observation. Then the other part of it is, though, that testimony is the reason that I do this. It's, believe it or not, it's not actually to prove if aliens are visiting or not. I don't know that I could possibly do that, even if I tried my best, or to convince others what to think. Definitely want to educate and share as much truth as possible. But ultimately, it's to vindicate all those who have been told to lie or just not talk about their experiences and their truth. So that's always what made me the most angry about the cover-up. And so, yeah, it's just like what you were saying, Ryan. It's so poetic. It's such a beautiful way to end the story in some ways for some witnesses, because yes, we're still looking, are aliens visiting? We don't know the answer to that, and there's a lot to come. But this is a new age where military members are being encouraged, at least it seems like, to actually talk about what they've seen instead of feeling shame or fear around it. So I think it was beautiful that happened.
Yeah, that's, I think that, again, that's what stuck with me most, exactly what you said. You know, the fact that this guy was saying, like, I now had the courage to do it. And same with, you know, after Kevin Day, Gary Voorhees, all these guys from the Nimitz event, the pilots, Alex Dietrich and Fravor, came forward, it sparked so many more servicemen and women to come forward and tell their stories, which is, again, like, we couldn't ask for more than that. I think we are seeing a sea change in terms of the stigma shedding, which is what the UAP task force and report kind of wanted to do, for their own reasons, obviously, to report more UAP that could be potential threats. We're getting there. We're getting up to the acronyms, guys, I promise. But before we do that, I just think the UFOs and nukes topic is always one of my favorites. I wish it didn't ever happen, but it happens, and it has to be discussed. And
if I may, Ryan, I'd just like to actually point out one thing. This is very important. Again, another researcher. I mean, you know, we've got to recognize Robert Salas. I think a lot of researchers from over the years who have tried to bring attention to this. I mentioned Larry Fawcett and Barry Greenwood, and there are many others. But again, another one who really should be recognized for the work he's done is Robert Hastings, who wrote the book UFOs and Nukes.
Yes.
Some who keep up with Lou Elizondo will note that Lou Elizondo, and actually during an interview that Chrissy Newton, who can't be here tonight, so I've got to try and prop her up and reference her a good bit. But I mean, Chrissy did a great interview there with Lou Elizondo for our Debrief YouTube channel. And in that interview,
yeah, that was great.
She did a fantastic job. And Lou actually mentioned it even during the interview. But you know, at one point he had mentioned that there was a lot of information that we wanted to try and find about the nuclear incidents. And he said, thanks to the research that Robert Hastings did, we were able to go back and corroborate a lot of the data that he, through the FOIA process, was able to bring to our attention. Now, look, ladies and gents, let me just point out to you what's going on here. We've got people in government who are looking at UFO investigations, okay, and incidents happening at nuclear bases. And where do they go to first, of course, get their idea for where they're going to begin their research? A civilian researcher who's used the Freedom of Information Act and that process to appeal to government and to get information and to try and comprehensively present that and analyze and synthesize that as Hastings did in his book. I think there was a follow-up book too, maybe. But again, Robert Hastings is a fantastic researcher. I interviewed him a number of years ago, and I'm so glad to see that in the current UFO dialogue, he's getting his due and proper, and more people should recognize Hastings for the work he's done with this. It even helped ATIP, Lou Elizondo, Chris Mellon, and some of the folks who have continued to look at this, you know, and again, it's all the more important that they do. So good on you, Robert Hastings, if you're out there. We appreciate the work you've done as well, my friend.
Absolutely. I think he was featured on Unidentified as well. So, yeah, I'm glad to see finally he's getting what he deserves. And that's the gratitude and thanks of many researchers like ourselves who are just, you know, building off of the shoulders of these giants, as our good friend Luis Jimenez would say. But you did mention Luis Elizondo, Mr. GQ. This was one I believe Chrissy brought to us, or was it?
No, that
you,
was
Jane?
Me. It's okay. I think was you just flipped our.
I flip flopped them. Okay.
It's okay.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about this. But I should preface this with I was in London recently, and it just happened to coincide with a trip that Mr. Elizondo had there as well. So I finally got to meet him in person. It was an incredible experience. We walked all around London. We went to the outside of the Ministry of Defense. One of us went inside. Take a wild guess who that was, who walked right in, no questions asked. So, bum bum, I won't go any further with that. But we talked all about just everything, some amazing stuff, some of the conclusions or supposed conclusions that ATIP came to. Hopefully, Elizondo will be able to share more about that soon. But one of the things he told me was the reason he was there, and it was to be interviewed for GQ magazine. And he told me not to tell anyone because he knew the shit he was going to get for it. And then it dropped, and I thought it was a pretty good interview. So I'm going to play a small clip from that interview, and then we're just going to get your guys' thoughts on everything Elizondo on the other side here in just a moment. So let me go ahead and play that for you here.
So, you know, you were working for the government for a long time. You then chose to turn whistleblower. Were you worried about repercussion? Why haven't they shut you up?
Well, probably because I'm pretty public at this point. That's a multifaceted question that requires several answers. Let me, if I can, be as frank as possible. There is a strong undercurrent in our country of individuals in our government, particularly, that know the seriousness of this topic. And what I've said before is this is not a topic that is similar to, let's say, fine French wine, where the longer you keep a cork on it, the better it gets. This is a conversation rather more like spoiled vegetables in the refrigerator. And the longer you leave it there, the more it is going to smell. And so we should probably begin to address this issue sooner rather than later, because whether or not these are real, that's no longer up for debate. This is a fact. We're here, folks. The question is, what is it? Where is it from? What is its intent? And what can or should we be doing about it?
So, yeah, you know, it was about an hour long. You can find it on YouTube. A lot of people in the chat are very divided on Mr. Elizondo, and I completely understand. That's what this topic is all about. People are very passionate. But again, someone mentioned over a million views already on that interview. Again, just getting the topic out there, no matter what you think about the threat angle or Elizondo in general. Hey, you know, I might take what he says about UFOs with a grain of salt, but he did give me some good marriage advice. So if anything, that's what I got from Mr. Elizondo. But yeah, what do you guys think of everything? I mean, there's no denying he and DeLong and everyone involved with everything that's happened in the past few years have changed the conversation of this topic forever. So, Jane, let's start with you. Where do you stand? I know you were very careful when Elizondo first came on the scene. I remember a lot of your interviews and what you thought about it. Where do you stand now on Elizondo and everything he's doing?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say like I'm on the Lou Elizondo bandwagon. I don't know that I ever will be. That's, I guess, my protocol. You know, Ryan, I fully trust you, but I don't know that I'll ever jump on the Ryan Sprague bandwagon. Right?
I get it.
And that's it's nothing personal. So I think I'm still cautious. I guess I feel more optimistic as time is going on that seems like Lou Elizondo continues to reference the history of ufology. And my fear always was that that would get ignored and swept under the rug. And so I think I'm cautiously optimistic. I do think that I don't think that everything is completely organic, but that also doesn't mean it's malintentioned. So I think that's where I sit. And then just the GQ interview, I recall reading the text article, and it's just the whole just the fact that he's in GQ and everything that's happened, it's just, I feel like it's symbolic. And then there was a lot in the magazine interview that I think is we should keep in mind, you know, because you know how Lou Elizondo is. Like he, you know, he drops his little
nuggets.
Yeah, nuggets or whatever. Yeah. Reese's Pieces or whatever for us to.
That's better. I like that better.
For us to follow. So, and so I'll just say, so real quick, because I had notes because I reread it, so it'd be fresh. But awesome. Just to recall, there's nothing really new that he's saying, but I think it's interesting he's saying it now and on for GQ, right? So for the masses, right? Just reiterating that the UFOs are not from the US. Talking about radiation burns, like the harm, like the injury, you know, from UFOs. He reminded people about he wouldn't talk about his own UFO sighting or if we had beings or organic matter, but he reiterated that, yes, I do think I believe personally, in my opinion, that we have recovered craft. He talked about Close Encounters of the Third Kind being like a great movie if you're going to the most realistic UFO movie, which I thought was huge. And then this part, he talked about the royal family and how the royal family needs to be more involved in the UFO discussion. And they have curiosities about this too. So I think just keeping that in mind, you know, going into 2022, yeah, I mean, it's very much the same narrative, but I think ending on the royal family, you know, and he was in London, obviously, you know, makes sense, right? You know, that you would talk about that, but reaching out to the global community, you know, what does that mean? So, yeah, that's my, I guess, summary. Not really even a reaction, but
no. Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought up the international angle, because I think that's a lot of what he and Mr. Mellon are doing right now, is reaching out to anyone throughout the world who wants to get in on this and, you know, chat UFOs, try to figure this stuff out outside of the government. So, yeah, it makes sense that he's kind of globetrotting and making waves and shaking hands. And like I said, dude walked right into the freaking Ministry of Defense. Like, I didn't even see him like flash anything. They Aha. just were like, hey, that's... what's going on, man?
Now we know which one of you walked in.
Oh, damn it. I gave it away. I'm not 007. I promise. But yeah, again, the chat's pretty divisive when it comes to Mr. Elizondo. But yeah, no, Jane, I think that would be cool if the royal family got involved. Like, that's kind of what they are. They're just like a symbol. And like, you know, they hold no true power per se, but look at how many people watch those freaking weddings and the birth of the children and all the weird controversial stuff within the royal families. You know, The Crown is one of my favorite shows. And I'm working at Diana the Musical right now, a musical about Princess Diana here on Broadway. So come see me, guys, in New York. I'll get you a drink. But
it's amazing.
Yeah, it's I could see it. I could see it them being good ambassadors for this topic and maybe pushing some people in Europe to take it more seriously. But I'm done. Micah, what do you think, man? Elizondo, I know you've spoken to him on many occasions and have been following his entire trajectory since the very start. So what do you think, 2021, what he's done, and what do you hope he'll do next?
Well, you know, I've only spoken with Lou one time at length, and thereafter the communications we've had, you know, have been mostly electronic email or texts and things like that. He provided a quote for a article that I'll be dropping, I hope, tomorrow or early this week at thedebrief.org. And this has to do with the newly established office by the DOD that's going to be looking at UAP. And again, Lou has been very outspoken about that. I'll tell you a few things I like about Lou Elizondo. Lou Elizondo, when on every occasion that he and I have ever interacted with one another, he's always been incredibly respectful. He has always answered every question that I have. And I believe that based on the answers he has given and the way that he has given them, that he has always answered me truthfully. And when he first came on the scene, as is naturally the case, and unfortunately, there's a lot of historical precedent for this, which, in fact, Lou himself has addressed. And, you know, the Unidentified Program on History also addressed this to an extent. But there's some precedent for why people who followed UFO developments are hesitant to get on board. And again, Jane, to your point, you know, kudos. I'm always careful not to start fan clubs. And I think a lot of people consider me just a curmudgeon or a skeptic because I kind of stand off to the side while everybody else is, you know, carrying, you know, the new emperor into town with his new duds, right? Whether anybody can see him or not. I mean, I tend to be that person like yourself, Jane, who kind of hangs back, waits, watches, and sees how things go. But again, despite having, as most of the UFO community does, those kinds of concerns going into things, I think Lou Elizondo has proven to be a person who is of noble character. And again, I don't want to just try and like prop him up and write his autobiography or his biography. I'm sorry, I couldn't write his autobiography, could I? But again, you know, but the whole thing is that I do want to acknowledge a person who I think is a good person with good intentions versus, you know, being a person who falls into that cult of personality, you know, almost worshipfulness. And I do think, frankly, that there was a lot of that early on. I mean, there were the people who were like, this guy's just another, you know, problem. This guy's just feeding us disinformation. Then on the other hand, there was this almost like just, you know, this kind of just hero worship kind of thing going on.
Messiah sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I'm like, he's a dude. He's a person. He's a guy. He wears a ball cap. He drinks beer like everybody else on Sunday nights and watches James Fox documentaries. Come on. You know, he's not any different from us, except for he happens to work, you know, for the Pentagon, and he happened to be in charge of a portfolio that included, among other things, you know, aerospace threats of the advanced variety and those which the Pentagon still says it can't identify. But again, I can only tell you from my own personal experience. And I mean, I don't think I would say I have reservations about Lou Elizondo, but I have reservations about the government's involvement in all of this, which, again, Lou has expressed similar reservations. So I find myself, as time goes on, more and more increasingly on Lou's, you know, kind of wavelength as it relates to all this, especially if you haven't read his tweets from the other day after the announcement of the new Airborne Object Identification Management and Synchronization Group. Lou has some rather strong words to express about this. I think that everyone should take to heart what he says. But again, as time goes on, I have seen him to be not only a person of character, but also a person who seems to share the convictions of folks like you, Jane, and you, Ryan, and me. And I think that he is a person who is as concerned about what's happening in this space with regard to UAP and the military's involvement with it as anyone else. Last point, and I promise I'll shut up. Again, if we go back and we look at the actual resignation letter when he actually left government, his resignation letter to then General Mattis seems to spell it out. He didn't feel like there was enough being done. And so, again, I think that, you know, it's important for a person to not jump to conclusions, but maybe slowly form their opinion over time, as Jane outlined doing. Don't form fan clubs, form a reasoned response over time, carefully and cautiously. But after doing that, I'm more and more impressed as time goes on, more and more impressed as time goes on with Lou Elizondo and the work he's done. And let's just acknowledge, I think he's done an awful lot for the community.
I'd have to agree. And I'll just say this, dude smells good. I don't know what cologne he wears, but he smells fantastic. I'm just going to say that. I know that's going to be the soundbite that people are going to rip, but whatever.
Do you have to keep the marriage advice to yourself, Ryan?
He gave me three things.
You know,
I want to know it. 12 years.
I've been married 12 years today, by the way.
Well, then you're clearly doing it right. I'm going to have to come to you for advice.
Oh, no, I'll take advice still. Trust me.
Well, we have Unidentified Celebrity Review, Luisa Menes in the house. Hello, all. He is joining us from Universal Studios. So thanks, man. Thanks for hopping in, listening to us here. Awesome. Yeah, we've got a bunch of the UCR crew. So thank you guys. Thanks for being here.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's move on. Micah, I know you have limited time tonight, my man, so you let me know. I've got one more story before we get to Gillibrand Amendment, but it's up to you. We can go fast forward to Gillibrand now, or what do you think?
Well, you know,
I'm putting you on the spot.
Let me just put it this way, Sprague. When the call of duty is on the table before you, you know, well, I guess you do what duty calls for, and so here I am, and therefore here I shall remain. So let's just go. I'm going to press on through tonight.
Thank you,
give
brother.
Long haul.
See, I knew if I did this publicly, you'd have to stay. So I'm a manipulative guy.
No strategy, just like by now, ladies and gents. Jane, don't ever let him pull this on you, okay? Watch out.
Okay, I'll keep it in mind.
Watch out for this one. He's dangerous.
Oh, well, this one really caught my attention. Not a lot of people talked about it, but this comes from our good friend John Greenwald over at the Black Vault. An interview he did with the former CIA director from 93 to 95, James Woolsey. And again, Mike, I know you've touched on this on your show as well, but James brought up a very interesting UFO encounter that a friend of his had. And all of us kind of stopped in our tracks when we heard about this. So I'm going to play the clip really quick, and then we'll talk about this and what role it might play moving forward with the intelligence agencies and UFOs. Let me find that. Here it is. Let's go.
There was one case in which a friend of mine was able to have his aircraft stop at 40,000 feet or so and not continue operating as a normal aircraft. What was going on? I don't know. Does anybody know? We'll have to look into it. There have just been enough things like that that have occurred. I think there will be a lot of examination of what's going on over the course of the several months or maybe years, but maybe months
and
to go.
And obviously you're talking about the secrecy around unidentified aerial phenomena and UFOs. Can I ask you to clarify, were you using an analogy or were you being serious that you had a friend that had an aircraft at 40,000 feet that mysteriously stopped?
I said it was, I have a friend who had been in an aircraft. 40,000 is not crazy. I mean, that's just all your pilots looking at this. No, that's not a wild and crazy idea. But I've talked to someone whom I respect who says that there was some event in which an aircraft was paused. And basically that's all I know about that.
Wow. I mean, you're kind of blowing my mind there. I really didn't expect that type of a story.
Paused airplane in midair. I mean, is this dude nuts or like what? I was told by a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend that this happened. But yeah, what did you guys think when John brought this forward? Whoever wants to hop in there, this is a pretty crazy, dramatic UFO encounter, if true.
Jane, go ahead, please.
I hadn't heard this testimony yet, so I mean, the first thing I think of, and because I don't have any dates or names though, because it's so fuzzy, but there are some good pilot sightings and encounters, and those are some of the most mind-blowing, right? Where you have a plane that can't be found afterward, right? Or things like this. So it's what I wish I could think of. There's a particular case. I can't even, I want to say it's like Australia, but it's probably China or something for all I know. And where there was a plane and there was, I guess we could guess that there might've been a flying disc or something was like sucked up to it or like seen attached to it by one witness. And then there was, you know, the separate, but yeah, I'm going to have to, that's a horrible rendition of that case. I'm going to have to look it up, but that's what it makes me think of, you know, what would halt a plane, something above it or below it. That's the time warp bubble, like Lou Elizondo talks about, right? Where, you know, objects aren't flying necessarily, they're moving things around them. So did this plane get caught up in some other UFO's travel, you know, path? Bizarre.
It's bizarre. And I'm so glad you mentioned that. I don't know if it was the second or third episode of Somewhere in the Skies, very early. Micah, you were my guest. The second, yes. And we talked in depth about the Valentich case in Australia. I don't know if that's the one you're thinking
of,
Jane. Micah, actually, didn't you speak to the girlfriend of the pilot that occurred to?
Sure did, yeah. She and I remain in touch. To some extent these days, you know, Rhonda Rushton, I hope I'll always be in touch with her. Rhonda had been the girlfriend of the pilot who went missing. And I suspect, I know the description that you're offering of a tangent observation about that case, Jane, because there'd been an independent sighting where someone said that they saw a flying saucer that appeared to have like a plane stuck to it or
yes,
something.
Yes, I think that's, yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And I think it was that case, but it was like an incident. It wasn't in all the reports of that case. I remember I found that just upon digging, and I didn't know how verified that was. I'm trying to look for it now. Oh yeah, there's this it's playing something on my phone. I was trying to show you there's this like kind of crappy I can't see it on my phone. You can't see it. It's like an artist rendition of just that. Yes. And so I don't know. You have these separate accounts and wild. Just adds confusion to the fire, I guess.
Certainly, always, yeah. Always. I mean, you know, as far as the pilot angle on all this and what's being described, you know, by the former CIA director, I mean, in that interview with John Greenwald Jr., again, just truly an icon in this field, in my opinion, and one of my favorite guys. But John, I think, was as gobsmacked by that statement as any of us were. I don't think he'd expected that. Now, I'll just mention that, you know, many years ago, I was on Coast to Coast AM late one night, and this pilot... This was not while I was on. I was listening to the show, and Leslie Kane had been the guest. Yeah. Mm. I was on Coast to Coast recently, and it seems that... in fact, actually, time before last that I was on the show, John and I... we're both on that night, just not together. They had John first and then me, and I got up early so I could listen to John. And then I don't know if John stayed up late to listen to me, but I mean, I of course am always checking out the entire thing. But no, on this incident, or this instance. It was almost an incident. Leslie Kane had been a guest on Coast to Coast this particular evening, and this was years ago, I think around the time that her book, you know, UFOs, you know, Pilots, Generals, and Government Officials Go on the Record. And I was really interested in hearing what Leslie had to say. And so I tuned in and listened, and there was this pilot who called in from Coos Bay who told this story about how in World War II, that a pilot, he had been actually part of a group that was flying, and this was, I guess, over Burma, India, I believe. And mm-hmm. he says that they all, there was, you know, the primary aircraft and then the wing pilots and everything, and that they flew through this kind of cloud formation. And when they came out of the cloud, one of their aircraft was gone. Yeah. And he said that, so we returned back to base, and he said that we assumed that there had been a fueling problem and that the aircraft must have just lost fuel and had turned back. But we got back to base and that aircraft had not gone back and had not arrived before us. It was genuinely missing. So at this point, they actually dispatched a research or a rescue crew to go out there and try and find the area where the plane would have gone down. Never any sign of it. And so this story, I mean, I still have a recording somewhere because I've been monitoring the airwaves that night, and I thought this was so interesting. I started recording it and everything, and I actually still have that someplace, and I always thought that was a very fascinating story. The Valentich case that you described there, Jane, you know, again, you know, Frederick Valentich was a pilot. He was a young pilot, only 21 or 22 years old, and he was logging his hours, had a you know, test coming up. That night, he flew south over the Bass Strait toward King Island and never came back. But while he was flying toward King Island, he was in contact with Melbourne Air Traffic Control and said that there was an object flying over him. And he just said that the object was kind of like orbiting him and that he was orbiting it, but that it was producing a green light. And the last thing that Valentich said was that, you know, the object is Melbourne, it's hovering directly above me. It's hovering and it's not an aircraft. And then there was about 14 seconds of metallic scraping sound, and then they lost all contact with Valentich. Rhonda Rushton, who had been his girlfriend at the time, I was able to get in touch with her because a listener of my program worked with her and said, Rhonda would be willing to talk to you and talk about a dear person. And she gave me a lot of information that had not been published. I'll specifically say in the skeptical literature, which tries to argue that he either just crashed into the ocean or that he had a girlfriend on the other island and was sneaking out. I can assure you it wasn't the latter. And as far as
what an excuse. Wow.
Well, I mean, you know, and I asked Rhonda, I said, did any of the skeptics who made these assertions talk to you at all? Not one. Not
of course.
One.
Right.
Ever,
yeah.
Not one had ever spoken to Rhonda. Now, she was interviewed by the Australian Aviation Authority, and she had a very interesting remembrance of what happened during that time. But again, coming back to what Woolsey describes right there in that audio, you know, I mean, an aircraft being paused by a UFO. One more incident comes to mind, and this is, of course, is the famous Larry Coyne encounter from 1973, where Coyne, his co-pilot, and then the two other servicemen who are coming back from a medical exam. They're on their way, I think, to Mansfield, Ohio. They're flying a Huey helicopter, and they see this red light coming in from the, I believe it would have been the east, I think. And as this thing's approaching, they think there's an aircraft that is on course for a head-on collision with them. And when this thing gets in front of them, I want to be very careful how I describe this because it's essentially a tic-tac, but they also said that there was a dome-like kind of a protrusion on the top. So it wasn't like a tic-tac quite exactly, but it was an oblong-shaped object with some sort of a dome on top. And that as they're observing this thing, it hovers. And then it goes and it takes off to the west and it vanishes, right? After kind of pass this green light passes through and it kind of scans them, they say, in the cockpit. At this point, they look at their altimeter and they realize that their altitude is not what it should have been. It's like they were moved by the object. Like when they were in close proximity to this UFO, Coyne and his company's perception of the event was that they had been moved by it and actually that their altitude had raised. So it is interesting that there are pilots who describe these kinds of effects. Mm-hmm. Far more frequent and far less often reported are just general electromagnetic effects, instrumental disturbance, even instrumental failure coinciding with mid-air collisions or close observations of UAP by pilots. And I've got to say that Ted Rowe and the NARCAP organization do an incredible job having logged those over the years. There's a lot of data on that, and I think that it really deserves more attention. And I'm glad that right now, in the preliminary assessment that was delivered to the ODNI back in June, one of the two main points, really, as far as all the takeaways from that document, one being, you know, UAP represent a challenge to national security, but the other being that they whether directly or indirectly, they represent a threat to aviation, both military and civilian. If, as you know, the former CIA director told John Greenwald, or if, as we observe in the Valentich incident, or if, as we observe in cases like that from World War II, you know, in a disappearing flight, if these have to do with UAP, it's definitely something that warrants attention.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think the Valentich case, I was just refreshing my memory. It looks like the Australian government looked into that and even and confirmed that he wasn't fake. It wasn't a fake crash. And then to reiterate, so again, I don't know how verified it was, because it was an unknown farmer who purportedly saw a flying saucer hovering with a Cessna aircraft attached to it. And they even wrote down like the plane registration number. And apparently it like matched up to things. Now, I mean, how maybe that was after the fact, you know, all of this somehow, you know, worked out. But yeah, just wild.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, bringing from Valentich up until today, I did an episode not too long ago about the 1952 invasion. You know, we had the wave in Washington, but all around America, primarily in California, there were UFOs like crazy, and Texas. Yes, mm-hmm. Thanks, Jane. That's why you're here. That's why you're here. Pilots were having close encounters with these things, even like motherships. And that brought us up until today. And something that Mike has covered a lot at the debrief is this conference that happened with the FAA and you know, civilian aviation. Again, the report was talking just about military UFO encounters with pilots, but now we're seeing that like the FAA is getting involved. Am I right, Micah, in that assessment? Or yeah, what are they doing now? Do they have to report now too? Because I know they weren't before.
Yeah, the FAA had for a long time said that they didn't, you know, investigate UFO sightings and didn't log information about those. In fact, actually, if you go to their website, and there was an article I did about this earlier this year at the debrief, the FAA officially said, if you see a UFO, you should contact Bigelow Advanced Aerospace Studies, right? Or you should contact local law enforcement. But they say, we're not really interested in UFO sightings. Now, when the preliminary assessment was delivered to the ODNI back in June, it stated that the FAA does supply some information to the UAP task force. And so I was very interested in what exactly that meant. And so I reached out to the FAA and I followed up with them, and I kept on the FAA for many weeks. And then they finally issued a statement to me after going through about three different spokespeople. And they said, yes, the FAA does collect information on, and they still use the term unidentified flying objects, mind you, which is not unusual, because, I mean, I know that UAP is more popular these days, but really my, you know, sense on all that is that they're essentially just trying to destigmatize the idea of UFOs or little green men by saying UAP. There seems to be this notion that that somehow legitimizes the conversation. And that's why I think a lot of people prefer to use that. But in my opinion, as far as I'm concerned, I have no preference. UFOs, fine. The only issue I would take with that is that I'm not sure these objects are flying in any sense of aerodynamic actual flight. I think that really a better way to describe what they do is they move through our atmosphere, and they may be able to move through space and move through water just as easily. And hence that term transmedium that we have seen introduced recently, and of course, which I think was really brought to a large audience by Tim McMillan's reporting there at the debrief right on the day of our launch. But all of that said, again, for my own part, I think that you know, the FAA and them being reticent to acknowledge that they investigate this phenomena, when in fact they do, it's understandable. The Air Force has done the same thing. No agency in government wants to have to be involved in this, but the FAA certainly does look at UAP. And what they confirmed to me was that they not only do, but again, when a pilot observes something that can be corroborated by instrumental data, namely radar, and thereby there's some sort of a instrumental corroboration for a sighting, that data is supplied to the UAP task force and presumably will also be supplied to its successor, the AOI-MSG, or the lovely name known as OIMSG.
OIMSG.
Wow. OIMSG.
Great transition, my man. You have brought us up to the most recent news we're going to talk about in 2021. Before we do that, Aaron DeSaria with a $20 super chat. Thank you, man. Thanks for the fun Sunday evening. Cheaper than going to a movie. What a deal. I couldn't agree more, man. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Wow. Everyone's been so supportive tonight. I really appreciate all of you guys watching on your Sunday night and to our two amazing co-hosts for joining us. If you are just joining us, we have UFO Jane and we have Micah Hanks here with us. And we are covering our favorite stories from 2021 in terms of UFOs. And obviously, this is going to be one of the favorites, I think, of all three of us and many of you out there. And that is the Gillibrand Amendment and the DOD group. We've got kind of a Godzilla versus Mothra thing going on here. So I'm going to play another quick video, our last video, I promise, and then we're going to dive deep to wrap things up here, guys. Give me one sec. Here we go.
There's certainly something being detected on Capitol Hill, where some lawmakers are taking UAP reports seriously. A bipartisan amendment proposed in the National Defense Authorization Act would create a permanent office to collect and investigate data on the phenomenon across the military, intelligence, and civilian communities. It would also require the Pentagon to provide regular reports to Congress and, more importantly, to the public, particularly when it comes to sightings reported by Navy and Air Force pilots. New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand co-sponsored that amendment with fellow Senate Intelligence Committee member Marco Rubio, among others. She says this is urgent, regardless of the origins of UAP, and recently told Politico, quote, "If it is technologically possessed by adversaries or any other entity, we need to know. Burying our heads in the sand is neither a strategy nor an acceptable approach."
So, yeah, that's kind of just a tease of the Gillibrand Amendment, which I think is what a lot of us were really excited about. And then what happens on Thanksgiving, of all days, or maybe the night before, I don't recall exactly, but we get this news that, and we should have been expecting this. Micah, you brought this up recently. A lot of people have, and I was one of the first to jump all over this and be like, what is this BS? The DOD is creating something to go against the Gillibrand Amendment. I can't believe it. Guys, they were saying this all along, that something was going to come after the UAP task force, according to the DOD. So I have to admit that I was one of those people who got a little too heated and passionate at first. But yeah, let's go there. What is the Gillibrand Amendment? Why were people so excited about it? And why did people have such vitriol for this DOD thing after? Whoever wants to take that first.
Jane, may I?
Please do the Gillibrand Amendment breakdown.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I want your take on the other side. So wish me luck. So the Gillibrand Amendment, is a proposed amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2022 in the Senate version. Now, that is currently stalled, and there are a number of reasons why, but really kind of key. If we had to identify one primary issue, it is that Florida Senator Marco Rubio has basically blocked passage of the bill until there is an additional amendment provided with regard to some controversies, allegations of human rights issues, and even possible genocide occurring in a region in China. That's a very, very, very short answer for what's going on here with this. Now, of course, that has nothing to do with UAP, but I mentioned that because Rubio also co-sponsored another proposed amendment. And if you go over to the Senate's website and look at the amendment tracker, spreadsheet, I mean, there are so many amendments. I understand that there were, I think, 25 that the Senate had whittled down in their version of this bill that they were going to try and vote on until Rubio had said, we can't move forward until we get agreement on this bill as well. And that's been essentially blocked both by Republicans and Democrats, not to get into politics. But I think that's an important thing to understand as we look at really what we're talking about here, because as far as this Gillibrand Rubio amendment, as it has been referred to since Rubio also co-sponsored it, we're talking about an amendment, a proposed amendment that would seek to establish or to provide provisions that, if passed into law, would direct the DOD to establish an Anomaly Surveillance and Resolution Office, as Gillibrand's amendment terms it. As you can imagine, this, although it doesn't say anything about UAP, it is an office that would look at UAP. A few things that specifically are outlined in this rather elaborately worded amendment proposal are the not only line organizations that it calls for that would be able to carry out rapid response UAP investigations, field investigations of UAP, They're also looking for emphasizing UAP incidents occurring around nuclear bases, something we touched on earlier. There is an emphasis on the transmedium aspect of all this, not just looking at aerial phenomena, but, I mean, the wide range of different unidentified phenomena that occur, land, sea, air, space, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, also provisions, and this is key of importance in terms of transparency, reporting, at least in terms of an annual report to Congress, semi-annual briefings, and then also provisions for certain unclassified information to be provided that thereby may also be presented to the public in unclassified reports, similar to what we saw in June with the report delivered to the ODNI. Now, all of that said, this was only a proposed amendment. We wouldn't know if this was going to be passed into law or not for some time, and now we may not know until 2022 because the bill has been stalled in the Senate. And my understanding is that Plan B is essentially they're going to take this bill and try and send this back to the House and then basically get a House version that the Senate will vote on. Now, fortunately, I'll mention also that in the House version of the bill, there was a similar amendment, and this amendment had also proposed this, known as the Gallego Amendment, or this proposed by a senator from Arizona, I believe, Gallego, or was it New Mexico?
I don't remember.
I can double check and probably find out here. It's important to get the facts, ladies and gentlemen, only the facts, right? But but this aspect in the House version of the bill. I'll find it here in a moment. But the Gallego version appeared in the House and actually had been the first version that initially called for a Office of UAP Investigations within government. And let me see here.
I've Arizona, got the information. I think.
Arizona, yep, there you go.
There exactly. We go.
So Congressman Ruben Gallego of Arizona was the first one to introduce this House version. So, again, the point is that we may still see the Senate passed legislation which has to do with the establishment of a UAP office within government. Now, the shakeup occurred on November 23rd. As everybody in Washington was going home for the Thanksgiving holiday, the DOD quietly made an announcement via a release at its website about the establishment of the airborne the Airborne Object Identification Management and Centralization Group.
There we go. You got it. Need.
Otherwise Ooh. Known as the AOR.
Take a drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
Take a drink.
For real.
Yeah. Cheers to that, right? God. So anyway, when they established this, one thing that was very interesting about that, and I'll note my colleague Tim McMillan, co-founder of the Debrief with me, and really kind of my right-hand man, Tim and I, We keep an eye on a lot of things happening, not just in the world of UAP, and you couldn't ask for a better buddy and teammate in this space. But Tim privately messaged me and said, I think it's weird at all that like CNN and the New York Times and everybody covered this, but they didn't have much to say about the Gillibrand Amendment. And I'm like, right. Yeah, okay, that's a very good point. And yes, it did have the appearance of outwardly being an attempt to try and by the way, Zinn's a bill right there saying the longer the acronym, the more obfuscation in the purpose. Yes.
Yep. Absolutely. Stole your thunder, but that's so true. Well,
my theory is, again, yeah, make it an unmemorable, barely pronounceable name, which is the very reason I've committed it to memory. You know, they don't want people to remember the name. They don't want people to be able to have a name that rolls off the tongue so that they can easily reference it when they're trying to talk about the nuanced aspects of government investigating UAP. That is not what they want. I'm convinced that that's the case. Now, I'm not the only person who thinks this. Again, very shortly after this release appeared at the DOD website, of course, we also had Lou Elizondo taking to Twitter, Christopher Mellon taking to Twitter, a number of people taking to Twitter and saying, look, what this current office outlines is going to contribute to the kind of problems we have seen in the past in terms of issues of transparency, not moving us forward. And in the spirit of the kind of transparency that we've seen a glimmering of with the UAP Task Force report acknowledging, I mean, for the first time in decades, oh gosh, there are things in the sky that we can't identify. That's very important. Now, again, what are the real issues with the AOI-MSG and how does it differ from Gillibrand and Rubio's proposed ASRO? Well, first of all, We're not seeing any provisions about any kind of transmedium observations. They're only looking at controlled airspace over special access areas, or I'm sorry, special use areas. Basically, we're talking about military controlled airspace. They don't want to have this open to the entire civilian airspace. You know, I mean, that would be a lot to have to cover. Now, I spoke with Dr. Mark Rodiger, director and scientific director also for the J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies over the weekend. And you know, Dr. Rodiger kind of shares my contention that it may not be nefarious, the DOD's reason for wanting to restrict this just to special use airspace. It very well may be that, as we saw in the ODNI report, what they said at that time was that most of these aerial incursions by UAP occurred during planned military exercises occurring in this airspace anyway. So the the DOD's perspective on all this may just be, well, this is where our military servicemen and women are encountering UAP. So let's restrict our investigations to that area, which rather than a restriction or a limitation, as many have termed it, one might view it. I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt here, guys, but one may view this as being them saying, well, let's narrow our focus to the places where we know we're seeing UAP. Hmm. And there may be historical precedent for that. This comes back to the nuclear incidents, okay? There's nothing that we have heard about explicitly that says that the AOIMSG is going to be looking at the nuclear sites and UAP incidents occurring there like the Gillibrand Amendment called for. But one would have to guess that if we're going to be monitoring, UAP occurrences around controlled airspace, that this would also include military sites and nuclear sites, nuclear weapons sites and what have you. And in fact, there's historical precedent for UAP occurrences happening there, as Robert Salas outlined for us in Washington earlier this year. So giving the DOD the benefit of the doubt, one interpretation may be that they're not trying to say we're not going to look at the sum total of UAP occurrences. We're just going to narrow our focus to looking at areas where we know they are occurring and for which we have a lot of documentation that seems to support the occurrences happening there. But again, the problems are also extended to the oversight and the transparency side of this too, because again, what we had back, I think, going all the way back to the summer of 2020 was a report from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, which was saying, you know, we support the efforts of the UAP Task Force. And if this Intelligence Authorization Act, which, Ryan, you reported on there for the debrief, that was one of your articles that you wrote for us. If this is passed into law, and it ended up being passed into law. So good work, Ryan. But they had said this when once it's passed into law, this will allow us, the Senate, to direct the UAP task force to deliver a report to Congress. And that's exactly what we got. So one of the concerns that we have about the AOI-MSG preemptively being established prior to the National Defense Authorization Act being passed into law by the Senate is, will we have those same provisions? Do we have any assurance that the Pentagon is going to provide data to Congress and to the people? Now, I reached out to the Pentagon in recent years, and Pentagon spokesperson Susan Goff got back with me, and she said, listen, we have every intention of doing that. There will be unclassified and classified data supplied to Congress, and we are going to be transparent. But again, for my own part, it's one thing to be told that by the DOD.
Right.
It's another thing for it to have been legislated. And guys, as is described in the preamble of the Constitution, you know, where it talks about we the people and you know, what we want and what our government is supposed to deliver to us, you know, in terms of assurances for protection and defense of the nation. I want those who I elect, not the ones who are appointed, who I have nothing to do with whether or not they work for me or not. The ones who I elect in Washington, I want those people to be involved in the process of appointing and directing what the DOD does. And that's why I support the Gillibrand Amendment. The big difference is there's one by appointment, there's another one through legislation, and we the people have a right and we have the ability to influence lawmakers on that point. So if you haven't already, and if you're passionate about this issue too, contact your senators and your representatives and let them know you don't want UAP investigations by appointment with no assurance that there will be oversight and transparency. You want the assurance through lawmakers and legislation that this information will be made available to the Congress and that any unclassified data will also thereby be made available to the people. Because you know what? yes, in that great tradition of Jack Nicholson, we can handle the truth.
Absolutely. Amen, man. And, yeah, you know,
seriously,
cheers to that. Before we get to your thoughts, Jane, we should mention the Big Phone Home 2 that took place this year as well over at the Unidentified Celebrity Review. This group has really invigorated people to reach out to the representatives. And, you know, maybe the defeatist in me of trying to do this for many years and trying to contact my reps who always gave me the cold shoulder made me jaded. But it was these Big Phone Home events that really got people passionate who never thought about this topic before. And it actually made a difference. We're getting responses by all of our reps now about this topic because it has been put on the House floor. It has been put in the mainstream media. I mean, Tim Burchett went on the House floor this past week and said, hey, Pentagon, your DOD thing, it's bullshit. And we know it. So we want that Gillibrand amendment.
Exactly. Hey, Ryan, I don't mean to interrupt, but let me just point out something else. And this is very important also. Again,
yeah,
talking about reaching out to the offices of senators and congressmen and women. Again, you know, I've done the same thing. And in fact, you know, now granted, my activity here is a little different because not only as a citizen appealing to my representatives, I'm also as a journalist reaching out for statements. But let me be clear. I reached out to every single a member of the Senate who has co-sponsored Gillibrand's proposed amendment, every single one. I didn't just do it by email. I called them and I actually spoke to interns at their offices in Washington. And some of them spoke to me, but I didn't get responses from any office except for one. And the one office that did actually respond to me was U.S. Senator out of New York, Gillibrand. And let me tell you what, and this is, I think, a very important point that should be emphasized. If you have any doubts about what senators think, because some may be under the impression that, you know, the AOI MSG is, oh, well, this is what the senators wanted, right? So this is good. They don't have to worry about it. Listen to what Gillibrand's office said, and this coming via Lizzie Landau, press secretary for her office. Lizzie says, and I quote, while we appreciate DOD's attention to the issue, the AOI MSG doesn't go nearly far enough to help us better understand the data we're gathering on UAPs. Senator Gillibrand and Representative Gallego's framework does much more to address the UAP issue while also maintaining public oversight. She continues, the legislation covers civilian oversight and establishes an advisory committee which would bring in experts and academics outside the government to participate in ongoing investigations. So there you have it. I mean, even, you know, the folks there at the office of Senator Gillibrand are laying it all out there for you. All the more reason I think that, yet again, we the people, you need to contact your senators, your representatives, let them know what you think, because they take issue with what's happening in Washington right now. I think we should, too.
Absolutely. Hear that, Gillibrand? She lives next door. I forgot to mention that.
Thank you.
Nelson will telepathically communicate it.
Nelson, get on that, buddy. All right. It's going to work on that. Jane, give it to us. What do you make of all of this contentious stuff going on? And this is our last story, so we're going to wrap things up after that. We want to hear what you guys think, too. So put in the chat what you look forward to in 2022 with UFOs. But Jane, give it to us. What do you make of all of it?
Well, I support the Gillibrand Amendment. I mean, that in the simplest way to put it. But there were three things in it that really stuck out to me. I mean, everybody was, I think, pleasantly surprised by the transmedium, a whole office just to investigate transmedium craft. I do think it's interesting the groups that would essentially have this new government job, right? Looking at UFOs may have helped to lobby for this amendment or supported it before. I think that's interesting. People should keep that in mind. And then the other two things that really stuck out was the focus on the physiological effects of UFO. I could definitely see disclosure beginning with, let's focus on the human experience, you know, things like radiation burns, like Lil Zonda talked about in the GQ interview. And I think about how if in, you know, 2021, people may be familiar with the Cash Landrum incident here in Texas, where the witnesses, you know, experienced radiation symptoms and tried to sue the government, right, to recuperate the medical bills. If that were to happen now in 2021, let's say, or 2022, where this amendment's passed, right, or whatever, what would that look like? Would they have won that suit? So I think that's really interesting. Separately, in the National Defense Bill, there is another section as well about anomalous adverse physical effects. So they are that's not an amendment. That's part of the foundational bill. So I think there's a focus on that. And then lastly, there was a call to task really the whole intelligence community with disclosing UFO and data and information they have. So this is, in my opinion, super sweeping. It even defines intelligence community as it's defined in the National Security Act of 1947. So it's reaching back to Roswell and trying to find those specific intelligence agencies and including them in this. So yes, does this DOD report is just shoddy and rushed comparison to it? So I could see how they were working on all along, then this amendment comes out, and so they're like, well, we better say what we're doing, you know, right? So I get that. I'm still, again, cautiously optimistic about Lou Elizondo and that narrative. And I'm like, am I watching a WWE, you know, show right now? I don't really know what I'm looking at, but I'm definitely a fan of the Gillibrand Amendment. So well written, so detailed. You know, I think we could get to the bottom of it, you know, if that amendment were passed. If people are truly transparent with the execution of it, right?
Exactly. That's a very good caveat. Well, I mean, it's crazy that we're even having this conversation, that we have we have two different UFO organizations or groups kind of battling for supremacy. It is. It's like Raw and SmackDown at Survivor Series for all my wrestling friends out there. I'm sorry. I had to go there, Micah. I had to go there. I'm rewatching all of WWE right now. I know. Oh, yeah. She's like, shut up, you two.
You can talk about Broadway again. I'll get all those references.
Let's go back to Broadway. Yeah. Oh, man. No, you guys bring up so many good points. I don't even know where to begin. Let's highlight some of what the chat's bringing up here before we wrap things up. 2022, really want public congressional hearings. We might get them. It could happen. One of my favorites, actually, Rodrigo says, I want to be flying a UFO. That's so true, man.
I get our hopefully flying cars soon. First.
Yeah, exactly. Galileo Project. We have to mention that before we go here, guys. Avi Loeb and the Galileo Project. I know UCR just interviewed him. Debrief now has Mr. Avi Loeb writing over there as well. So that, I'm going to say right now, personally, that's what I'm most excited about moving into 2022. Isn't so much ASRO or it's the Galileo Project and the scientific endeavors going on with trying to find techno signatures or all the other amazing things, the images that Galileo Project hopes to capture. That's what I'm most excited about. So I'm so happy the chat brought that up. So what do you guys think? What do you think about the Galileo Project and what Avi Loeb's doing? And can it find a place in everything going on in the UFO conversation?
Well, I'd like to hear what Jane has to say about that, but I'll first just interject a great kind of quote-worthy statement from Avi Loeb. He's made this many times. And that is, the skies aren't classified, and the, you know, scientists should be training our telescopes and looking. Now, granted, I've said this many times, and I've corresponded. I've interviewed Avi twice, and of course, corresponded with him, and continue to correspond with him. And yes, he's writing for us now at the Debrief. I mean, imagine that.
Crazy.
Never saw, like, a year ago when we launched this publication, that, you know, Avi and that Leslie Kane and that Ralph Blumenthal would be contributors at our website. But, you know, I'm thrilled to have them. But that said, again, I think to Avi's point, even if it's going to be maybe a little more difficult, I would say, nailing down what UAP are than just training our telescopes on the skies and trying to, you know, see one. I applaud and I fully support a Harvard astronomer getting involved in this, because, again, I was talking, who was it that I'd spoken to about this? It was Mark Rodiger when he and I were talking, you know, from the Center for UFO Studies. And he said, I just got to ask you, he says, you know, what do you think about Avi Loeb? Boy, he's a firebrand, isn't he? And he says, and especially if you think about the history of Harvard astronomers and their attitude toward UFOs, Donald Menzel, he said, Menzel would be turning over in his grave if he saw what Loeb's doing. But again, I fully support the efforts of the Galileo Project and Avi Loeb, and I welcome a serious American astronomer who's willing to interact with we, the little people who have been looking at UFOs now for decades ourselves. I welcome his involvement. I welcome his enthusiasm, and I sincerely hope that with his telescopes or any other kind of methodology he hopes to apply toward this, that he finds UAP. I hope he does, because you know what? Then it won't be withheld from the public. Then if Avi or anybody with Galileo Project finds it, presumably that information is going to be in the public domain, as it should be, because we can handle the truth. It's about time we do.
Yep, and the skies are not classified, as Avi Loeb has said. So, Again, that's why I think the scientific endeavor is so much more important than just the government and this national security threat.
It really is. Yeah, but I wanted to hear what Jane had to say, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Loeb's a cool character. It's funny, though, because the Oumuamua, that whole saga, I loved that was a big news story, I guess, for me, just getting people to even imagine that light that they saw that they thought was a shooting star could have been a spaceship is a big deal. Avi Loeb's done a really good job at awakening everybody's imagination in the Washington Cathedral. He said, in the cathedral, he basically talked about God's plural or whatever, you know, in the Bible and, you know, in religious texts being aliens, and nobody booed him. So He's a very influential person. He's able to suggest, in my opinion, some really out there concepts that, you know, the evidence is kind of murky about. But he has a lot of credibility when he talks about it. And so I think we'll wait and see. Let's see what the Galileo Project does. Let's see if he's able to escape signing an NDA. Like, you know, like he says, you know, how much is it? You know, here he is already part of this government amendment going into this. I'm a public, you know, transparent investigator, right? So already it's getting murky, in my opinion. So I think he might be tested, and as any of us would be, I think, in his position. So I'm very excited about it, but I'll wait and see. See what they come up with.
Wait and see. Welcome to ufology. The drama continues.
Yes, it never ends.
It's amazing, guys. Well, I'm just going to end here. I'm going to let you guys go. You have done way more than I could have ever asked for you. But I'm going to read some of what some of our followers over on Twitter want in 2022. But I want to thank everyone in the chat for coming tonight. I want to thank Micah for coming and filling in for Chrissy. I couldn't think of a better person to do so. We will have her back on soon. She really wants to do another show, Jane, with you.
Yeah, I miss Chrissy.
Me too. We will make it happen. Absolutely.
But, I want to let people know. So on the Bill Nelson and the Washington Cathedral chat, this Friday, Jess Rogie will be joining me live on YouTube. We're going to be bringing back Weird Hollywood. So if people recall, Bill Nelson mentioned Armageddon, the movie Armageddon, because they're sending out a craft. It's actually in orbit right now to do a similar
DART mission.
Yeah. So we are rewatching Armageddon, but we'll be also breaking down some of this NASA stuff again this Friday evening, 8 Eastern, 6 Pacific, 7 Central.
Well, I know we're all right then.
Right?
Okay, then I'll be there.
I think that's right. But Friday evening live, but we just figured that out, and it's so relevant. I had to throw that out there for folks.
Yeah, of course. And I look forward to seeing Ben Affleck putting, what was it, graham crackers on... what's her name again? Yeah. Man.
I'm excited to rewatch. So.
That's amazing. Well, before we go, guys, please let us know everything you're up to. I know Micah and I just did an incredible roundtable over at Jim Harold's show. So that should be coming out in the next few days, maybe week or so. A lot of fun. Peter Robbins was there. Christina Gomez was there with us as well. Kind of like this, we talked all about 2021. So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, Micah, before you go, man, let us know where we can find everything you're up to and what comes next for you over at the Debrief and Micah Hanks program.
Well, certainly. And of course, be on the lookout for Ryan Sprague, because I believe he's going to be joining me for a roundtable over there on the Micah Hanks program, my podcast. You know, around the holidays, I like to do roundtables, and that's definitely something that Ryan joins me for pretty frequently. You know, Jane, we got to get you over there sometime too, because I've been looking forward to us being able to finally talk, and tonight that has happened. So I'm just going to check that right off the bucket list. Okay. but yeah, I hope it won't be the last time. And of course, if anybody wants to follow me online, you know, I mean, all the information is right here at Micah Hanks on Twitter. MicahHanks.com is the website. And don't forget, of course, about thedebrief.org, which is where you can find all the reporting provided, not only by me, but of course, Christopher Plain, Tim McMillan, MJ Banias, and a cadre of other authors that include, from time to time, Avi Loeb of Harvard University, Ralph Blumenthal of the New York Times, Leslie Kane, UFO veteran reporter, also the New York Times, Ryan Sprague. I mean, if all the names that I've named haven't already dropped your jaw, then that one certainly should. Ryan Sprague is a pretty regular contributor over here at thedebrief.org as well. And very glad to have all of the aforementioned as a part of what we do. And of course, I've got this article. If you're wondering now what the current state on this Gillibrand thing is with regard to that versus the DOD's AOI MSG, I've got an article that's coming out this week that I'm confident is the most comprehensive look probably that we have seen yet on this that has been reported anywhere. I mean, I reached out, like I mentioned, to every office of every senator who has co-sponsored the legislation, scientific organizations, universities, the DOD itself, also former defense officials. Lou Elizondo has chimed in. I mean, there's an awful lot, and you'll see it all there at the Debrief.
Thank you, Micah, and thank you to Aaron and Deborah for the super chats. I do want to read one more thing here. Micah, voice of Butter Hanks is how we're going to sign you off tonight, my man. So, Micah,
all right. I'll
thank
take you.
I appreciate everything you do for this community and everything you do for me and everyone out there at the Debrief and at your show. So thank you. Have a great night, brother, and happy holidays. We will talk to you soon, okay?
Thank you to you both, Madam Jane and Mr. Sprague. Thank you both, and thank you for what you do for this community, Ryan. You are a very necessary voice. I hope you will continue to be for many decades to come, sir, or at least as long as it takes to end the truth embargo.
All right. As our good friend would always say. Good night, brother.
I love you both. I love all you guys out there. So you guys take care. Have a wonderful evening and happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye, Micah.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah,
just amazing.
I've followed Micah forever, and I've never gotten to talk to him. So that was awesome.
Oh my God. Just bringing the voices and the minds together, Jane.
Great.
I know Micah's one of my closest friends. We've done many conferences together. We've traveled the world together at this point, but I still get nervous when he comes on. Cause I know
that brain of his, I just keep the insane recall. It's like, do you have a teleprompter? How did you know what UFO case I was talking about?
He's a walking
that encyclopedia. Amazing. Yeah, that was incredible. Do like thank a UFO you, trivia. Yeah,
we will. We'll have to start doing UFO Jeopardy.
Yeah.
But Jane, you mentioned you're bringing back UFOs in Hollywood, but tell us all about everything else. It's amazing how far you've come in this field since I first met you and since I had you on the show.
My first interview. You're my very first interview ever. So it's so crazy to be here. UFOs are officially real and so much has changed. You know, from when we first met. Yeah. And so it's exciting. I'm excited for this next year, the 23-minute video that Lou Elizondo keeps teasing, the Galileo project.
The triangle photo, hopefully.
Yeah, all of it. I think it's going to be an awesome year. And robots, too, and AI, and all the things around it, right? So it's multifaceted. So it'll be.
Yeah.
This is a great end of the year celebration almost. I'm sure some things will happen before.
I know.
Before
I know.
We get Let's, to.
I know. It's not quite
our
over
favorite
yet.
Story might still of 2021 might still come out. You
it
know,
always happens in like December. Week, so. It really yes. does. So we might have to yeah. have you back soon yeah. to do that. But so, of course, before you go, Jane, please tell us where we can find everything you're up to.
Yeah. So, yeah, like I mentioned, this Friday, Weird Hollywood, that's where we watch a movie, but then we break down the real behind the scenes, the real plot points. And so with Bill Nelson's telling us to watch Armageddon. So we're going to watch that. But yeah, you can search UFO Jane on YouTube or all the social media. And if you're in Texas and interested in local sightings here, there's TexasUFOSightings.com and then the Texas UFOs Facebook page. Go interact over there.
Awesome. Again, I have to thank you for doing this such short notice. I think we covered a lot.
This is
and
great.
There's so much more yeah. we could have covered, but there will be more stories to come, I'm sure, in the coming weeks yeah, and no months doubt. Into 2022. So once again, Jane, thank you for joining me on Somewhere in the Skies and happy holidays to you and Glurp
yes,
and the whole
you
family.
Too. You too. Thank you, everybody.
All right. Take care. Amazing guys. This could not have gone any better. I'm so happy that Michael was able to hop in. We will have Chrissy Newton back very soon, to talk all about UFOs and, some really interesting, exciting stuff that her and I are getting up to in 2022. We're going to get ourselves in trouble in the UFO field, and we can't wait to share a lot of that information with you. Hopefully very soon. But before we go, I did want to read some of what our Twitter followers over at Somewhere Skies. If you're not following us on Twitter, head on over there at Somewhere Skies and Instagram at Somewhere Skies Pod. But I wanted to read a couple of these for you here. Shadows of Your Mind on Twitter said, I'm looking forward to more nations getting involved in the conversation and starting new projects and collaborations. And I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of that is going to be seen. And this community is just growing every day. And I think it's incredible. So, yeah, I'm with him on that. Rather Be Squidding on Twitter said that he's looking forward, to Astro and AOIMSG. They're great, but I don't think we'll see anything from them in 2022, which he's probably right. I'm hoping for leaks. Wasn't it Rubio who suggested we get leaks from the UAPTF classified report way back this summer? I'm still waiting, man. I'm waiting rather for those leaks. So you let me know if they send anything your way or over at the debrief. I'm sure the debrief would be one of the places that they would leak that. They did leak us a lot of the very early UFO videos to come out this past year, along with Jeremy Corbell, who's done incredible work as well. Ricky Caricus on Twitter says, I want public hearings and thoughtful questions. More lawmakers being exposed to the issue and, dare I say, subpoenas. That would be really interesting if we got subpoenas in Congress for UFOs. And last but not least, Michael G on Facebook says, the necessary and uncomfortable shift we are going to have to make from a reductionist and materialist worldview to a selectionist and idealist worldview. That is a lot to ponder. That's pretty heavy to end the show with. But Michael, thank you for contributing that. I want to thank everyone in the chat for the super chats, super stickers, and for all of your questions and comments tonight. It's been just more than I ever could have asked for our 2021 wrap up here. Again, thank you to Micah and Jane and everyone here. Have a very happy holiday season. Our good friend here, I forgot his name already. Someone tell me the chat. Nelson? Was it Nelson that we named him? Nelson says, happy holiday season. I've gone off the rails. We're going to end things here, guys. You can find everything I do at somewhereintheskies.com. If you want bonus content and material and free merch, head on over to our Patreon campaign, patreon.com/somewhereskies. And I should mention, for the entire month of December, half of our Patreon contributions and all of our merchandise sales are going to the Women's Refugee Commission, a wonderful organization here in New York City that helps displaced women and children and youth find the necessities they need to survive as refugees here in America. So again, All of our merch sales will go to that this month and half of our Patreon contributions. If you want to learn more about the Women's Refugee Commission, just Google them. You can find out everything they're up to. And yeah, I would really appreciate it. And also help the show as well by getting the word out with our merch. All of our merch can be found in the links in the show notes as well. And with that, thank you guys. Thank you for being here. Have a wonderful morning, night, day, wherever you are in the world. Keep looking up. And as always, keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching somewhere in the skies.
Somewhere in the Skies is produced by Third Kind Productions in association with the Entertainment One Podcast Network.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.